Hello. Good afternoon. I'm Yoon Soo Park, and this work is in collaboration with Jonathan Suri and David Abramson from Columbia University. So the title is Combining Cluster and Factor Analysis to Examine the Effects of Social Vulnerability on Recovery. And, you know, throughout this session, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how you use GIS applications. And I think that the most recent presentation was on, you know, if you have a set of variables, how do you create an index that you can use for geographic purposes? So I think this touches on those broad areas, but specifically focusing on social vulnerability on recovery. So I'll start with some background, which is, you know, whenever there's a disaster, people are interested, you know, how do you measure recovery from disaster? So one method to look at recovery is through repopulation. You know, you can look at houses that are rebuilt, or you can look at, like others did here, census survey data. And there are other ways also. You could look at economic indicators and so on and so forth. One of the methods that's been used and that's increasingly getting attention in the literature is to use deliverable address counts. And these are available by the United States Post Service. And for this purposes, we got it from the Greater New Orleans Data Center. So this is a data set that could be used as a proxy for recovery because let's say you have 100 deliverable addresses at a certain time point, and then you have a disaster, then following the disaster, if there's 50 houses that are deliverable, then you could sort of track the rate of recovery from these counts. So it's been used in several sources as a proxy for recovery in that sense. Here, for this presentation, we're focusing on within the context of Hurricane Katrina because in August 2005, 83% of the houses were flooded. Now, 3 years later, 71% was deliverable. A year after, 76 was deliverable. So, I mean, these types of address counts provide some kind of a measure for recovery. So here are some maps. So here in 2005, we see the deliverable addresses in 2005, and you can see the differences in 2009. I mean, you see a lot more blue, which tells you that, you know, there's a lot of households that, or addresses that are not deliverable at that point. We also have a map that shows the percent change that occurred from 2005 to the latest, showing in 2009. And some of these are in 3D, so you can note that the height of these figures represent the greater change. One factor that you would immediately recognize here is, okay, I mean, you have a disaster, you have geography, but then you have to, of course, consider the amount of damage that's triggered by the disaster. So the factor that we looked at next was damage. And if you look at, this is just a trend line of the deliverable addresses. Your y-axis is the counts, deliverable address counts, and then this is just time points. So zero is before Katrina, and then four is summer of 2009. You can see that this is just randomly sampled six different census block groups, and they're pretty much flat, you know, because there was moderate damage. But you can see, again, how deliverable addresses can be used for this context. You contrast this with catastrophic damage. And you see more of a curve because, you know, prior to the damage, there's a lot more households where you could deliver, but afterwards, there's a big dip, like for example, these other areas. So okay, now we've established there is a measure for recovery. There is a measure for the triggering factor. You know, what are sort of the factors that we could look at that would predict recovery when you want to look at it from a geographic perspective? So here comes in this measure that we're trying to develop, which is the social vulnerability index. And it's similar to other indexes people use, like transportation index, as Dr. Bordes presented earlier. I mean, this is one index. So define social vulnerability, which is it's characteristics that influence a community's ability to prepare, respond, cope, recover from a hazardous event. And you can see by definition, it should be highly correlated with recovery. And as you can note, there's a lot of census variables. You know, you could have, you know, 50, 60 census variables. So the question is, how do you get them down to several variables that are of importance to you, variables that are reliable, variables that are valid. So, by training, I'm a psychometrician, so my interest is in making an index that is reliable and valid. So that's where I sort of getting at this question from. So, Of course, this social vulnerability will be a function of demographic factors, you know, like income, race, ethnicity, gender. And it's also going to be a function of complex constructs, like healthcare access and things of that nature. And in fact, studies have already examined these social vulnerability index from the perspective of Hurricane Katrina. And this is where we begin the study. It's, okay, there is already an established measure of social vulnerability, and it seems to be that method that's being used to create this index, it seems to be one that's sort of standardized in the literature. So from that point on, how do we refine this measure? How do we refine this measure so that it's reliable and valid? So here we introduce a measure that's called SOVI. It's been around for nearly 10 years. It's a social vulnerability index, and it's based on principal component analysis. Just to give you a rough idea, what this does is, you know, you have a set of variables. It's a variable reduction method. So, you know, you tell it to specify several dimensions. It sort of grinds everything into those variables that you want. The problem is that you don't really know what these variables are. I mean, you have specific relationships that you have among, you know, 40 or 50 variables that are correlated with this factor. But what does that mean? I mean, there's no measurement errors associated with this index. So this is where we want to contribute. This, you know, we want to create a measure that's reliable. And so so the point of this presentation would be, okay, let's create this new refined measure of social vulnerability, and let's try to see if it's validated with recovery data. So that's the purpose of this study. So again, it really gets at using a cluster algorithm-based method, which is an exploratory method, and then we combine that with confirmatory factor analysis, which looks at both inferences that actual sociologists would look at, and they would be able to say, you know, these variables would load to this factor, these other variables would load to another factor, and then based on that exploratory results, you would run that with a confirmatory factor analysis to get measurement fit indices. So I'll show you more of how this process went about. And so the advantage of this is that you get clear predetermined list of variables, and they have, you know, they're based on substantive meaning rather than getting everything together. Of course, if you reduce a lot of variables together, you're going to have significant results because you're going to reduce a lot of variance into several variables. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting the variables that are actually meaningful. So that's the context that we want to drive at. The second goal that we have in this study is to, once we create that measure, you know, how well is that measure associated with recovery in a non-spatial context? So that's goal number two. And we use longitudinal methods because we have several measurements of deliverable counts over time. We use longitudinal growth curve methods. And then in goal number three, we employ spatial regression to see whether these new variables that we created are explained by factors other than non-spatial correlation. So whether there is some spatial components associated with these variables. We hypothesize that there would be because of the nature of the disaster. So, you know, this is the list of census variables. I'm sure you won't be able to see all of them here, but it's just to demonstrate, you know, these are some of the variables that we use from the census. And these are free, available. You could download them or get them accessed from public libraries. And you could get their examples such as percent renters, percent aged over 65, those types of variables. And then, so I want to show you the traditional method that's being used in the field right now, which is if you have these set of variables, what they do is, you know, you would run a factor analysis or principal component analysis. You try to see how many dimensions there are, so you could do something like a discrete plot. And from there, you'd be able to find out that, okay, there's about four dimensions that's being available from these list of variables. And from there, you'd identify those four factors, and then you'd do your analysis from then on. So now, this is a little bit from the approach that we took, because in our approach, we first did this kind of exploratory phase and then went on to a more confirmatory phase. So I'll show you, it's some sort of a graphical fashion of what we did. So this is an algorithm called extended similarity tree. And this is available free if you could just Google extended similarity tree, or if you use SPSS, you could just look, you could just do hierarchical cluster algorithms, which would give you that kind of clustering dendrograms. And from there, you could sit with your context experts and say, okay, what are some of these variables, how are these related with one another? So when we sat down with our context expert, he was able to identify these different factors. And from those different factors, you could specify using a conformatory factor analysis, you know, these variables would load onto this factor, these variables would load onto this factor, and you could test that structure because you would actually get fit indices. So based on these structures that we have here, we fit a conformatory factor analysis, and we were able to get pretty good results, 82% variance explained, root mean square error less than 0.05, Tucker-Lewis index above 0.9. These are just indices that are used in the literature to say, okay, this is a psychometrically valid measure for social vulnerability. So this establishes the reliability aspect of our first goal. But we wanted to go further and look at whether this measure of social vulnerability that we're calling X3V for now is validated. We want to see how it correlates or how it's associated with recovery. So in the next few slides, I will show you how, you know, when we compare it to the SOBI, which is the traditional method for the social vulnerability index, how that compares with this new measure. So here is the SOBI, which is the traditional method that's been around. As you can note, this is just a list of variables, but you can see that here it identified four factors as the discrete plot identified earlier, but we're not really sure what these components mean. I mean, there are going to be some percentages of ethnicity, some percentages of income here and there, but you're not really sure what these things are. And so that's why I just kind of labeled them component 1, 2, 3, 4. And here, if you just look at the interaction with time, you see that components 3 and 4 have a significant interaction with time, which means that for these two components, areas with these two components have a significantly lower rate of recovery when you're measuring recovery through deliverable addresses. Now, if you contrast this with the other measure that we're looking at, we could actually have names attached to these components. So you have working poor, areas that are dominated by the working poor have significantly lower rates of recovery. So you have these substantive meaning. Also, areas that are dominated by the primary workforce also have a significantly lower rate of recovery. So in that sense, it's a little bit different from the traditional method. And also, at this point we've established that there are these non-spatial results. So now we go on to, okay, are there spatial associations with these variables that we created with the recovery? And we use the geographically weighted regression, and we see that components 1 and 2, this is a stationary index. Their p-values are less than 0.05, which can tell us that there is some component about the geography that these two components are attributed to. So, but then again, the problem is we don't know what these two components are. You know, when you look at these maps that show hazards or of the United States, they're based on these components, but it's hard to determine what are really these components based on. So that's what some of the things that these are telling you. And then in ours, we also found out that the primary workforce, there is some geographic component that's explaining the slower rate of recovery for primary workforce. So here, I mean, I've just kind of laid out some bits and pieces of the results, giving you some idea of how we did the methods. But in general, that's we try to refine how you would create an index using census-type variables and something that's more reliable and valid. So some take-home points from this presentation. I think the first is, you know, if you create this measure that's based on exploratory and confirmatory methods that we've demonstrated, We found that working poor and primary workforce, these two factors are significantly associated with repopulation. We also found that primary workforce had significant associations with geographic components. So there are some geographic factors that are driving differences in the rate of growth for primary workforce. And again, I reiterate the point that the SOVI measure showed significant associations for different components, but then again, the problem is it's hard for us to fully grasp what these different components mean. But at the same time, it's been shown in the literature over and over. There are many papers on SOVI, which has shown that it comes out significant in many different findings. But I would again try to refine this measure, try to test it in many different settings, different data sets, so that it's validated in different data sets and it has good contextual meaning. And then the final take-home point from here is, I think the message that we get from many of these other presenters are, you know, people are now trying to map a lot of these factors that are related to health disparities in the maps. And sooner or later, people have to develop really good measures that are indexed, that people can base policy decisions on, that are reliable and valid. And I think that to that end, these types of further work and that really adhere to measurement properties have to be studied, further researched in the future. Thank you very much.
Questions on this presentation? And if we could have Dr. Dominguez and Steve, you want to come down in case there are questions for, to sit here in case there are time for one or two questions for the broad group. But, yeah.
Yeah, I can have a question on this one. So you mentioned that you used exploratory factor analysis.
Yes.
And then you did the confirmatory. So the exploratory piece, did you consult the context experts only after you put in all the variables, or did you, how did you identify the first set of variables that you were going to look at when you were doing?
So in the exploratory case, it's very much just data driven. So you know you put it in any statistical package, it gives you a result. And so in our case, we use a cluster algorithm for that purposes. So you know it creates you some kind of diagram that it thinks are clustered with each other. And then we brought that diagram to the context expert, and then he was able to figure out, okay, these are things that would go together because he has the contextual ideas of how things would go together. And then we tested his idea by specifying also statistically, you know, these variables will load onto this factor, these variables will load onto this factor. And that's how we did the confirmatory phase. Yes?
Yeah. One of the things I wonder is the primary workforce, is their pay scale related
yes.
to this? Because I suspect New Orleans' pay scale mm-hmm. was pretty poor.
Yes.
And they essentially fell into the very low income. So mm-hmm. we settled at the, you know, I'd love to relate their poverty level among the primary workforce.
That's a good point. We haven't done that analysis yet, but I think that's something that we would definitely like to try, is to factor in pay scale and how that see how that result differs with this model that we propose. Yes.
We're close to our time. Is there any question for the panel broadly?
I think they're all just beautiful illustrations of like amazing set of methodologies for understanding needs across geographic regions. I'm just curious if you know sort of the extent to which these are applied beyond research in sort of in actually redistributing services such as healthcare, the federal qualified healthcare units, or sort of for recovery services.
Do you want to go?
Go ahead.
I know that these types of methods are used all the not to this much extent, but they're used all the time to make policy decisions. At the center that I was affiliated with previously, we had a mapping expert, Jonathan, was sitting right there. he would make maps, and our center the leadership would present the findings at congressional hearings and things like that. So I think. They do make use of these data for large scale policy decisions.
Yeah, and just to
I think that, you know, sort of like what the UDS piece that Sean did earlier too, is sort of, I think, you know, the model that a lot of groups are going to, you know, sort of that democratization of data, right, and allowing you know, people at the local level to make decisions. I think that's sort of where a lot of this is going. So.
Mine isn't a question, it's just reinforcing what you just said, because I was going to ask. It seems to be in the clinical practice, whether you're solo or whether you're a group, whether you're a community health center, to have that data so you knew where your patients came from, where the issues were. And also, I'd like to relate it to the problem identification or our diagnosis of our patients to see clusters. Because epidemiologically, we need to know more when we're out in practice, and we often have less access to it because it's never coordinated like it's coordinated.
Yeah, it's definitely an opportunity for increased utilization of information.
Yes.
Thank you so much, all of you.